That's been a previous discussion that we've had about having particular cost centers, and so,
We did do some work along those lines in the course of the task force. And it's very, very difficult to do because there's only a few direct costs related to each branch, and then you get it, you know, rent, utilities, those kinds of things are pretty easy to determine by branch. But then a lot of costs are system costs, and it's how do you allocate them. For the task force purposes, we did a model of allocating based on percent of circulation. Is that a fair way to do it? We'd have to decide that if we wanted to really do that. And so, and there's a lot of, the materials you purchase and the staff that's involved in getting those things on the shelf. So all their time would have to get allocated, and it's very, very difficult to do for an organization like ours. Not impossible. We'd have to sit down and make some assumptions and, what do you want to base the allocations on? But it hasn't been.
Well, one thing I was impressed with, the level of overtime is so low when you compare that.
We use very, very little overtime.
Because we have no money.
You're right, but I was just saying it still happens.
Yes. We do have temporaries. Yeah. We do have on-call staff that are temporary staff that we can use to cover for illnesses and vacations and things like that. So that saves us overtime. It's a lot less expensive than overtime. And let's see, telecommunication services outside on the second page of expenditures is high because we haven't gotten our E-rate money yet this year. E-rate's the federal subsidy. Just had a conference call on it today, and we should start getting it within the next 60 days. So they said we didn't file something. We said we did, so we refiled it with AT&T, and we should get the money. Last page, personnel is doing pretty well. And the very, very last page is the one we like to look at now. We didn't used to. See all the parentheses? It's our month-end cash balances. We've been in the black for 6 months. No, more. Nine months now? Ten?
Nine.
Nine on here, but 10 was.
Yay.
So, that's good.
That's really good.
So, Sam.
Yes, ma'am.
Question?
You ready?
Well,
yeah. It's okay. Actually, I would like to, under revenues, and maybe this is not such a, maybe not a budgetary question, but maybe more of a process question, and I, just to educate myself, I wanted to talk about money that comes to the financing authority, because I kind of heard that from a watchdog source that there were certain monies coming to the library that wasn't going to the financing authority, and I'd never heard that before, and since there are certain
Other than donations and fines, but
the two main, I'm just looking at the revenue sources. Sales and use tax obviously comes to the financing authority.
Mm-hmm.
And the maintenance of effort
contributions
come through the financing authority.
Maintenance of effort is property taxes, but it's also contributions under the JPA agreement that are paid, like City Santa Cruz pays $1 million, annually.
And Watsonville pays that.
And Watsonville, that combined with property taxes collected by the county are all considered maintenance of effort.
Okay.
A couple thoughts I have is I know the county holds on to a small amount of money to pay the audit, so that amount of money doesn't come over.
Right.
I don't know exactly what it is, but it's a small number, relatively speaking. Also, I have heard, and I haven't dug into it, that the county likes to keep some reserve somewhere of library money as a way of smoothing out the payments when the Library Financing Authority pays. Now, I've looked at the numbers for the Financing Authority, and they zero out, is how it looks, because I've seen what the money flows into the Financing Authority of the county and what flows out, and every month they send us a little report that shows how much money came in and went out. But I think behind the Financing Authority, the county, when they receive the property taxes, they've got it somewhere else. And I'm not sure they take all that money put it in the financing authority. Financing authority zeroes out what it gets, but there might be some other money sitting over there as some kind of a cushion for property tax distribution. I'm not sure.
Right, but once the library gets it, it flows through the financing authority.
Yes.
Because what you were saying was that there's sources of funds that don't go through the financing authority.
Well, right. And I don't... Have you heard this comment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't hear it directly, you know, so it's a little bit of hearsay and the criticism. So, maybe it's the piece that you're talking about is that the county's holding back some of the if it's property taxes, supposedly for the library system, before it even goes to the financing authority.
Okay. Well, it's interesting that they're able to give us property taxes at the beginning of the year. Because you know we don't pay the property taxes until December, and yet we're getting allocations, and I think their intention is an action is to try and give the library a constant, steady, predictable amount of revenue throughout the year. To do that, they have to adjust something over there, either save something up or whittle it down, or so there's something going on behind the scenes that allows them to be able to make those smooth payments.
I think I remember last spring when we got a little bit of extra money than what we thought we were going to have, and I'm pretty sure some of that was based. The county said that they were freeing up some money that they'd been holding on to. I could probably check the minutes from the May or June meeting, and I think, and I may not be using the right words, you know, freeing up money. That may not be the right way to put it, but it was their projections were better than they thought. And it was based on something.
Well, and I remember there was a bigger increase in property tax coming, maintenance effort coming over to the library than there was an increase in assessed value of property tax collection. And there was something there with the county. When I asked, I think I asked Pat Bush, and there was some, it's like they had some extra money that they had that they were able to distribute to the library over and above what came in during the current year. So it looked like a bigger increase, and he said it was not really that big of an increase in property taxes. It's just that there was this other money sitting there. I've also heard the opposite, that if for some reason the county didn't hold back enough money somewhere, and they start giving payments in July, that potentially they run somewhere in their system into the red. So I think they're trying to balance it in the long run, but I think it's possible that they either have something extra or something short year to year.
Okay. Well, regardless of how they may manage it, but ultimately they do run it all through the financing.
Yes.
Okay. So we can clear that up. All right. So I'm going to be on the financing authority, and so this is helpful for me to hear more background and also look at that. So some other
questions. Can I just make one comment on that, what you just we're talking about? There was some discussion early on in our task force meetings about timing of the receipt of our revenues from the county. And I think Ellen took an action to go off and look into it because the thinking was, why do we, if it's there, why do we have to wait to get it? You know, maybe we can get money as it comes in because it does come in primarily those two big lump sums for the property tax side of it anyway. And so there were some questions on the task force members saying, why are we waiting? Why don't we just get it?
To the extent they do keep it, they do give interest on it. So you'll see the county gives interest on the money as well as the taxes they send.
Yeah, I think this was probably in a context of thinking about cash flow problems, which if we can work our way out of is not so much an issue.
That's a good point. Yeah. I just want also to clarify under revenues, the under state operating grants, that $70,000 is what we're not going to get.
We are hoping we'll still get it this year.
Oh, we are. We're still. Oh.
Unless they pass the budget. I mean, unless they do something for the second half of this year's budget and take it out, it is not in next year's budget. That's PLF.
We filed the claim form to get that money.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could still take it away balancing this year's budget, but I haven't heard that they're going to.
Okay. Well, we'll write that up then.
I'd write it off for next year.
Well,
I'm not going to put it in next year's budget. But I wouldn't write it off for
this
year yet.
I think that would be the prudent thing to do.
And Teresa, I know you mentioned that the impact to our system could be greater than the $70,000 that we get directly from the state because the consortiums, the library consortiums that we use to help with buying consortiums and jumping on grants with each other are fairly heavily funded by the state. And if they lose that, which I expect they would, then those consortiums may not be able to provide the financial benefits.
Because we may lose eligibility for LSTA money.
Right, so grant money.
Yeah, that was one of the conference calls I was on. As soon as I finish this report to the task force, I need to write a letter. I'll be encouraged to write letters to our legislators about the effect on the library, so I'll actually have a copy of that for the board.
Yeah.
Gathering the information, I just have to put it aside right now. But yeah, we there's several different sources of funding, and some of what they've zeroed out, there isn't a line item in the budget for these monies. They're not monies that are going to go local. So the governor's idea that he's going to redirect the money locally, this money isn't local money. So we're just not going to get it. The impact most serious for us really will be ineligibility for LSTA funds. And LSTA funds is a federally funded, flows through the state library. We're getting a $40,000 grant to do staff training, which we're getting. That money's okay for this year. It's actually almost a 3-year lag with LSTA funds. And you have to have state has to have a certain match. And if we don't have that match, then we're going to lose eligibility. So instead of $16 million in a few years, we'll be getting like $2 million. The state will get LSTA money. That's going to be a big blow. Also, the reciprocal borrowing that happens, like the fact that you can go into any library, you can take your library card here, show it at any library in the state, get a library card at that location, and check out your book. So if you're in San Diego and you're on the beach and finished your book, you can go to the library, get a San Diego card, and check it out. That will no longer be reimbursed by the state. So libraries may choose not to participate. So it's there's literacy money that's in danger. We don't get literacy money, but we've just never applied for it. But literacy money, you know, the governor is not cutting education yet. He's going to cut literacy. So a lot of literacy programs, that's the only source for people in the state for literacy. So there's some pretty severe, I'm sure you'd be feeling, you know, indirectly, utility community bridges to some of these things that can't be provided. So anyway, as soon as I come back from under the task force, I'm going to try to get a better handle on how we're actually going to be affected.
I had one other question just off the proposals by the state, and I asked this before Sam got here, but the impact of RDA, you know, eliminating RDA programs on Scotts Valley and the Capitola branches, the proposed branches, is that going to cause, I mean, hardships, or what's, I mean, is there a contingency plan?
Well, we don't have a contingency plan yet. I'm not quite sure what it would be, but it would put Capitola in a breach of its contract with the county. We have a contract with the county to fund the new library out of RDA funds until the year 2017. So if the current governor puts those into the category of encumbered funds, but they're not really encumbered funds, but if he did, because we have a contract, we said we would fund it, okay, up to $2.4 million. So if it was put into that category, they're already encumbered, therefore he's not going to touch it, okay, then we would be okay. But if they were put into an unencumbered category, then we have no means unless we then shift it to the general fund to meet the county's obligation. However, the whole premise of that arrangement was on the fact that Capitola set up a redevelopment area, which included that kind of part of the area. So the whole basis for why that transaction, that negotiation took place would be washed away, because we would no longer have a redevelopment area. So I have really no idea. It would just be a big can of worms.
So you know? That's what one of the questions I also had was, is it the city of Capitola that's entering these contracts or the library district itself?
No, it's the city of Capitola.
Okay. Library's not involved in
the
Strangers.
And Scotts Valley as well.
Scotts Valley is far enough along, I think they're
but they, yeah, they've already almost completed their project, but they're kind of at the back end. We're still at the very front end of that same arrangement that Scotts Valley had. And so, it would be a whole huge can of worms. And it may very well be that that new library wouldn't be able to be funded. I think that that's the position we take for the county. That we can't do it, and we no longer have the means, and there's no longer the justification for the county imposing that requirement.
Scotts Valley already sold bonds to construct and buy the library up there, so they've got a contractual obligation. I think everything I'm reading is saying money, RDA money to pay back the bonds is safe. And then there are lots of questions about what else is safe or isn't safe, but that looks pretty secure.
Yeah. Do you need a motion to accept the staff report?
No.
Well, Ken, I had some other questions about expenditures.
Okay.
And actually, they're the ones that are significantly under percentage.
Like?
I know. Well, like on page one of expenditure, the first one is janitorial services, which is near the bottom of the page. We're at 36, only 37%.
I'm not sure. Is the billing on janitorial, like, do they run behind?
Well, it's a monthly bill, so this could be a month old. That would still be low, though.
I would add to that we budgeted the janitorial contract as for monthly maintenance. And then we also contracted to get additional services priced out with them, and they have not been very good about doing those extra services. So we budgeted for those extra services, but we haven't gotten up to schedule them. So that's probably some of what that has to do with being low.
Okay. Because, I mean, that would seem to me that if you have a scheduled contract, and those tend to go in lockstep.
Unless something's lagged when you get the bill.
Well, because it was a citywide contract, we all had to agree on what the base service would be.
Since
the library had above and beyond expectations, we had to do extra outside of the contract work that we budgeted for but haven't been able to schedule again.
And similarly, at the next to the bottom of that page, landscaping maintenance services, we're only at 14%. Are we just not doing landscaping, or are we?
We are doing landscaping. We're using the sheriff's volunteer program for a lot of the work. And I would say because we're short-staffed in that area, I don't think the guys have really gone out and been able to repair all the irrigation that's needed. And summer is coming, so that you may see that inch up as we move into the next season.
Okay. And on the next page, the software maintenance services at the top third, we're at 25%.
Software maintenance services. Is that the new system?
It's number 5224.
Wait, I'm missing pages. Oh, I'm sorry. There we are. Software maintenance services. Oh, that's the new computer system. We haven't paid for it yet. That's the migration of the new integrated library system.
Okay.
We're getting ready to migrate the data any day now.
Since we just recently approved
the contract,
doing
that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that may not get spent until the very end.
But it will.
We may end up, we're hoping to complete the migration by June. But but I'm sure we'll get a bill after we do the data migration, which is the most expensive part.
Okay. And then under, down below on that same page, 53112, library functional supplies, 22%.
Those are related to materials, when we do processing of materials and stuff. So those are often bought in batches. So we may not need anything yet. We may do a big order, you know, in when we do need it. So I think, I'm not sure where we stand on library cards, but there's an example. We buy library cards out of that, and we only do that every couple of years. And when we do it, it's a big expense all at once. And so that should even itself out. Or we're getting more stuff pre-processed, so we may end up underspending it there. I mean, there's so many things in there that it's a hard one to know exactly what's going on.
Well, I mean, just look like the activity, like for the first 6 months, that I mean, it looks like there could be some potential savings there.
There might be.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to get a sense of some of these significant line items that we're underspending and how we may actually end up. The next one, 53312, which is natural gas, where I guess warm weather, we're using a lot less natural gas, where it's only 24%.
Yeah, those are always estimates. Yeah. Yeah, and David, normally by this time of year I'll be starting to do projections in mid-year and how we're doing and stuff, but I let the board know a couple of months ago, and I'm holding true to my word, the task force is just taking all of my time, and so I haven't been doing the things I normally would do. We're almost there, and I can start trying to get a better handle on projecting to the end of the year how we're going to do.
Yeah.
But since we're not looking bad, I'm not worried. I mean, I know I really need to be more worried, but
it's always a good thing, but
yeah.
I just, you know, in February we're going to be asked to make some tough decisions, and so maybe having a complete sense of, you know, what the budget outcome may be projected to be for the whole. So I think, if you could have a better sense of where these things may end up come June 30th.
I mean, some of them we can look at, but it's the big one there. I mean, a lot of these aren't a lot of money, so we're not really talking much. And I can tell you the software maintenance will get spent. That's the big one, and that will get spent. So,
The next page, well, they all say page one. But
personnel?
Yeah, the personnel page. Again, the temporary health is just at 39-40%.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems to be, we seem to be doing well there. Can we assume that that will continue?
Yes and no. People start taking the, since we didn't close at Christmas like the city did, a lot of staff earned a lot of extra time off, and people start taking it, that could affect us. I'll also let you know that we're going to be doing quite a bit of training this spring, between the transition training we got the grant for and the new ILS, and we may need to bring temps in to cover while staff goes to training. I am going to be talking to you all probably at the February meeting about actually closing for a day to do one of the, instead of a staff day, to do one of the staff trainings. But in general, we may use more of it. So it's that's a hard one to know about. We did make it through pretty well through, because this should take us through. No, this wouldn't take us through the last payroll, would it? Because the last payroll, would this go through the Christmas payroll? Or does that hit the next?
No, it should have hit, because I think we did have a pay date for late December.
Yeah, the extra pay period.
That would be in.
So any vacation people took during that time that we covered temps. So temps that we used while the city closed and we stayed open should be in here. So we are doing pretty well.
Oh, except the very last, sorry, the very last week of December.
Very last week of December.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be
there was a pay date at the very end of December, but because the pay date is a week after the end of the pay period, so the very last week of that pay would not be in.
Okay, so there's going to be quite a bit of, probably quite a bit of temp time coming out of that one. Now, we did cut the temp budget this year by quite a bit, so... you know, just didn't want to go too far because we just didn't know. But the new models do deal with that in a different way. So it is actually cutting. It is cut quite a bit in the new models that use it.
And then under, I know this, I believe the FICA line came up. Did we ever find out why we were so, I guess, low? We're at only 14%.
No, I don't remember what it was.
I know we asked questions about the timing. It is paid. It does look low. Because we're paying 6.2% of temporary salaries. That's the FICA rate.
But my understanding is it includes something else for temps in there besides FICA, isn't it?
We budgeted.
Is there a benefit that they get besides FICA, and then we just put it under FICA? Was there something?
Medicare is broken out separately.
Well, if it's temp thing, then if temps are low, then it would be low. But that's really low.
Yeah. 6.2% of 206,000, which is the temporary salaries actual, should be about 12,000. This is 9,700 instead of 12,000. So
right.
There may be a slight delay for some of the timing difference. I'm not sure why it'd be that much. So it looks like we did budget for more than just 6.2% of
the right, that's what I'm saying. There's something else in. I think we found out there was something else in there.
Yeah, we'll make sure we report that next time.
Okay, thank you. I remember finding out about it.
It's just that the account numbers are different, but the services are the same. Telecommunication services outside. If you look on page one, there's like 43,000, and then page two, it's 111. What's the difference between those two?
The city, we used to be on the city phone system. And that, so any of the charges for the phone system were considered internal, not outside. Outside is where we pay other, the main headquarters and central library, and I guess the city of Santa Cruz facilities were on the city phone system. The others are all on different phone systems depending where they are. So that was internal charges were those we paid to the city for the phone system. We switched to our own phone system independent of the city at the end of last fiscal year. We still owe the city for 2 years of the build-out for the system that we did have. So that's about 40,000 a year for this year and next year. And then we're done paying the city. So that when we budgeted this year, we budgeted for it, but we put it in external, and then they told us we had to have it in internal, so we had to move the money over to internal. So that's money we have to pay to the city. There's also a few charges for some lines that are still tied up with AT&T that aren't that we had to maintain that we do have to pay the city for. So we do have a little bit of a monthly fee that we pay the city for that. The external charges are for our own phone system that will ultimately save us quite a bit of money. Actually, it's going to save us money even with the 40,000.
I forgot where it was, but there was an internet charge on that.
Yeah.
Is there Wi-Fi in the library?
There's Wi-Fi in all the branches, 9 in the morning to 9 at night.
And then are the terminals, are they set up?
They're hardwired.
They're hardwired?
Yeah.
Why is that in terms of not having
speed and bandwidth. This building is on dark fiber. I mean, we're on we're on real high and getting better because of Presidio. So, yeah, much faster, much more robust. And we're changing out the computers and putting in newer PCs so that people can do more. Right now, you can't do a lot on the computers. They're not really computers, they are terminals.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Any other questions on the financials? We can move on to other business here. Ongoing committee schedule and members, you know who our members are. And let's just confirm what time we want to meet on Mondays. I'm flexible. David?
I prefer to meet at 6 o'clock is great.
6 is great?
Yeah.
Sam?
I think 6 would work for me, even though it didn't very well today. But
so 6 it is.
6 would be fine.
Okay.
Works for me. And those are all the fourth Monday, not the last Monday.
The fourth. Now in February, it would be February 28th. I'm going to make an assumption. You can correct me if I'm wrong. If we end up having a third meeting on the model, on the new service model, we won't have finance before it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay.
Yeah, just checking. Okay, and now moving on to task force update. We wanted to bring some information here to the finance subcommittee on how we have done our costing projections so that you can come up to speed on it. If there's any questions that you have, it would be a great time for us to answer them. And then also to talk about the fact that, you know, once we finalized everything, the world doesn't stop moving and changing. And so we have information about projections that we would have updated had we known about them, you know, a few months ago. And that always happens when you're doing projections. New news comes out. You just have to say, okay, put a stake in the ground. These are the assumptions we're using. But we want to talk a little bit about that because it's something that we've been trying to figure out how to deal with in the task force report. So what we have in front of you, I'll just give a background, then you can do the details.
Thank you.
We're not going to talk about the model designs, because that really, the report has not yet been 100% signed off by the task force, and it's not been released yet. But, and we've named all our models the catchy letter names that you see, Model A, B, C, and D, to keep them as objective as possible. Every one of them looks the same from the standpoint of the costing sheets, the line items that are on there. And you can see, obviously, starting with revenue projections, which were taken from the current library projections that we have that Jack and the county provide. Expenditures divided into subcategories, personnel being the biggest one. Two other line items, which is costs. Costs are the same no matter what model. No matter how the model is designed, no matter how many branches, how many whatever, those costs are going to be the same in all of the models. And adjustable costs, those are the expenses that will vary based on the model design. And then you'll see capital projects, which there are a number of in all of our models, to try to gain some automation efficiencies, special funds, reserve funds, and then our subtotals, operating gain or loss, cumulative fund balance as we go forward, and cash flow reserves. So I'm going to turn this over to Teresa, but one thing I will say first is, Sam, you may recall, David, you probably won't. The board directed the task force from a financial standpoint to include a materials budget at least 8% of our total costs, could be more, but at least minimum of 8%, to put aside funds for our cash flow reserves to equal $1 million,
10%,
give or take, but we just used $1 million to make it easy, $1 million at the end of the fifth year in our projections. I think that was it on the financial direction that the board gave. And of course, to meet, be financially sustainable so that you're not in deficits. Okay, Teresa.
I don't have anything else to say.
Oh, good.
That's basically it. There's where we got to some of these, like particularly the personnel, which of course is a huge piece of the budget. There's several spreadsheets behind it that fed into this that we're not going to put out there because they're way too complicated. But they, each model was taken and staffed based on what services and programs it was providing and how they wanted to provide them. And so there's separate spreadsheets on staff costs. It's about three spreadsheets on staff costs. And then there's more detail line by line like we have in our five-year projections, but we didn't put that in because it's just too much detail. I mean, what we pay on postage, that doesn't need to be in there. So we collapse those kinds of things together. One of the things on books, on the materials budget, we kept having a problem with circular references by calculating the percentage, the 8%, 10%, whatever the model called for, was being calculated on something that it was a circular reference. It didn't work. So we ended up, we just made that on revenue. So the material, books and materials actually are a little bit higher than 8% of costs. They tend to be 8% of revenues, which is, it's not a big difference, but it was just an easier way to calculate. So this is what we intend to put in the report for each model after the description of the model. Does this kind of work for you?
So for each of the models, you had 8% of revenue. You didn't go above that. You just looked.
One of the models.
Some models did. If you look at the
formula.
The materials budget is down at the bottom under subtotal expenditures. If you look at right under subtotal expenditures, books and periodicals, you'll see that differs for the models, and that's why.
The sheet's going to get cleaned up. You're seeing a rough version. This is the one part I haven't finished with yet. Well, it's the only part, but it's the major part I haven't finished with yet. Putting the final report, so
Well, I was curious in Model A of why books and periodicals is higher than 8%.
Because they chose to do that.
That was one of their goals.
Even though there's a net loss, was it?
We really looked, I will say, that was one of their goals, was to increase materials budget clearly above the minimum. And as we did this, we were looking out a bit towards the last few years to see whether it would be financially sustainable long term. There's almost all the models have some investments that need to be made in order to gain future efficiencies, cost efficiencies. So different models chose different timing of that, different ones to do, and a number of them show minor operating deficits
in a given year.
But I don't think any of them show operating deficits as we move out into the third, fourth, and fifth year, and certainly not fund balance, cumulative fund balance.
And they are all, I mean, in different ways, they're putting money into capital improvement reserves and cash reserves. So when the particular model is selected, we would then sit down and go, say you selected this one, but you don't want to have an operating loss you're not willing to dip, you know, you may be willing to dip into reserves, but if not, we might say, okay, so what can we cut this year to not do that? And in this case, we might say, okay, we're not going to put anything into capital improvement reserves, and that's pretty much going to take care of the negative, you know.
Right.
So getting into the specific, when we get into the specific model, we'll be able to make certain adjustments depending on what the board wants to do or how we want to do it. So.
And the other thing I can say is that I think I struggled with on the task force, I think other task force members did, is you sort of have to keep reminding yourself there's so many assumptions built in here. These are really very different service models and organizational structures that have not been tried or tested yet with our system. And so as Teresa and her staff go off once the board has chosen a model or set a direction, once Teresa and her staff go off to really look at it and say, okay, this is what this model intends, they need to make some changes. It may not work exactly as those of us non-library professionals on the task force imagined it might work. So, you know, I keep trying to remind people that this is sort of a top-level estimate. We needed to get to this level of detail to make sure we thought things through in our model, but it wouldn't surprise me that these numbers would change. I mean, they will change,
which,
you know, the day after it gets approved as other things change.
Which brings us to the new information that Jack brought to me actually today. We had been, when we had originally done the five-year projections, we had made an assumption about the percent spent on benefits. And that was, we increased it by 1% each year. It went from 42 to 43, eventually to 46% of regular salaries being spent on benefits. And I asked Jack to take a closer look at that, and we recently got updated PERS information. And so Jack sat down and studied it, and in front of you is the spreadsheet that he came up with. And as you can see, he was looking at what is the effect on the library budget of certain increases in PERS and in health benefits.
PERS and health. We think things are going to stay pretty flat, but PERS and health are still just rocketing up, and we've been getting more and more information, especially with PERS, that just suggests that the rates are just, the increase in rates are being sped up, and they're just going up a lot. And so so what this tries to do, and I see need to, you see some years across the page at the top, but also down at the left, is trying to show what happens each year. The lower subset there, you can see 2011-12 repeated a bunch of times. That should have changed year to year. You had 11-12, 12-13, 13-14.
Right.
And so what this does is if you start in 10-11, consistent with the reports in front of you, it's showing that the benefit cost is 42.8%, almost 43% in the year we're in. And that's a good solid number.
That's percentage of payroll?
Percentage of payroll.
Yeah,
that's right. For the library employees,
yeah.
For the permanent employees. And then what I've done is to show the significant pieces of increases that I think are going to happen over the next few years. So 11-12, PERS has told us the retirement rate's going up 1.9%. We know that for sure. Health costs, we don't really know. We know the first half of the year, but not the second half of the year, because the rates go up every January. But we've been, if we assume that health rate's going to go up 10% a year, 10% on $5 million of salaries translates into about 2%. Right now, we're spending close to $1 million a year on health. So if health costs go up 10%, that's $100,000. $100,000 of health increase on a $5 million salary base is a 2% per year increase. I recognize these numbers may change as if the staff is different or salaries are different or whatever, but in rough terms, that's about 2%. So if you assume that health is going up 10% a year out into the next 5 years, that's going to add an incremental extra 2% every year just for health. And retirement, FERS has told us to expect a 0.7% increase the year after next, and then a 2.8% increase the year after that. And I think there'll be some kind of increase years after that, so I put in 1%. So if you take all these specific pieces and layer them on, you can see that potentially the benefit rate goes up from 42.8% to 60% in 5 years, a very large increase. And we know retirement benefits are going up, the rate this year is 13.5% or something, versus telling it's going to be 18.8% in 3 years. And they're also telling us that if they change their assumption about what they're earning on their investments, it's going to go up even more. So this assumes that the library and / city continue to pay this share of health benefits and retirement. So this assumes that the deal stays the same in terms of what the city's paying and the library's paying. That could obviously be different, but this would be a what-if with those assumptions of 10% health increases each year and increasing retirement costs. So that's a challenge.
The library, may I ask the question quickly? The library employees, they have the same health benefits as the city employees?
Yes, same employees.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So our dilemma, Teresa and I talked about this today when we first saw this information, is we're done with our models. They're put to bed, being spell-checked and sending them out so that we can get it ready to send out, release to the public, and get them to the board members in time to have some time to look at them. So they are not reflective of this new information. We feel like we need to put something in the report, or at least have some verbal, a separate something to provide the board to understand that when the board is making decisions on these, to keep in the back of your head. I mean, we know other assumptions may also be low. Who knows what we're going to find out? Other assumptions may be high. But we happen to know about this one now and have some new information. So the board is just going to have to think about that in looking at the financial costings of each of these models and understand that all of them, assuming the new assumptions hold true, all of them will not look as positive as they do here. So I guess I also had a question for you, Sam, and you, David. Does that make sense to you as a way to handle this?
Well, it does, but to me it would be more useful if this was put into gross dollars and either by note or some reference noted so that you can have some sort of comparison.
I could, based on each of the models, apply this percentage and come up with a dollar amount that it is.
But you're also thinking of maintaining the same recommendations the board made for the 8%, the 1 million. That would impact the actual expenditure cost. Would you want to see something unless there were changes to the cash flow reserve requirement that was established by the board, and there are no changes that are made to the benefit structure? This is where we would be for each of these models, so you're not going back and looking at ways to cut further?
No, that's what I said. We're at the end. We can't really do that.
If we put these numbers in, because I did it very quickly on the model that had the least cushion and the model with the most cushion, and none of them make it.
What about even with the cash reserve? What if you lowered the cash reserve?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an option.
That's what I was saying. That, if you showed
that's
that
an
without
option.
Changes, having just some caveat that says that unless...
Well, for example, I think Model A here came out instead of 604,000 to do good, was like 1.6 to the bad.
Okay.
So you could then do the mental math of if you didn't have the $1 million reserve, it's still 600 in the hole, plus it's got, well, I don't remember what happened, net operating loss. Similarly, Model D, which is on the other extreme, ends up with almost 1.5 million to the good. It ended up, I think, about 600 in the hole, which means the $1 million reserves would cover it. So, I don't know. I mean, we were supposed to bring back financially sustainable service models, and in essence, we wouldn't be doing that. I mean, and 6 months' work is just, so I don't, I'm not sure what, I mean, we certainly can show it in dollars.
My opinion is, I think we can show it in dollars. I don't think we have to go back and, you know, redo our spreadsheets, but have a separate, as Sam said, something separate that we can provide that shows an assumed amount.
The additional dollars that this would mean, is that additional benefit dollars based on this?
Yeah.
It could just be added as another line at the bottom, for instance. It
could be a footnote or...
Right. It could be just a sign out. Teresa just thought she had it done today.
Did you finish it? There'll be another piece of information.
Well, and that we along the way.
I'm not answering my phone, and I'm not reading my email.
We along the way have been saying, of course, we're going to get new information, but
constantly.
You know, we've got to put a stake in the ground. But this new information is much more potentially significant than other kinds of new information. So. And since we're at the end, the teams can't go back who worked on these models and try to re-jiggle. It's not that simple. It's pretty complicated once you take something down, what other impact that is going to have. So my opinion would be provide the information so people understand, the board clearly understands that the financial sustainability issue is not 100% solved in these projections. And the direction that the board will take, I mean, obviously you need to look at the costs, but the direction that the board will take will need to take that into account. And ultimately then the board will have to decide how that money is going to be found. And once you see the description of the models, you can say, well, gee, in this model, it would be easier to flex something. You know, that it's easier to flex costs down in this model without a significant impact on our service. It's not so easy, perhaps, in this other model to flex expenses down without a really significant impact on our services. So that's really going to have to be for the board to think about the flexibility of the models in that area.
I have some other questions just about these worksheets and just to help me understand it. So the subtotal expenditures for each year under each model is the total of the subtotals.
Yes.
Okay. How does, where it says system cost regardless of service model and then adjustable cost based on service model, mm-hmm. it includes the total of both of those numbers too?
Yes.
So you take both of those plus the personnel costs. Does the adjustable portion include the looking at personnel in kind of flexible way?
Built into the personnel is different ways of staffing based on the model. So the adjustable cost has nothing to do with personnel.
So those line items aren't in the adjustable portion?
No.
Adjustable
is things like if you've got less than 10 branches, the branches that you don't have, you're going to save on utilities and janitorial and rent. and everything like that. Those are the things that are adjustable based on the model. So we looked at the model and said, this is what it's got. So
maybe there's a different word than adjustable, because I think adjustable is a little confusing too. What would they be called, Jeff, normally?
Variable. Fixed cost, variable cost.
Yeah.
Cost accounting.
Right. So I think it is fixed costs, regardless of the service model. You're still going to need IT department staff at the same level. You're still going to need a library director.
Except those are built into personnel.
Oh, I understand. I understand. I'm just trying to.
That prompts a question for me. So the assistant cost regardless of service model, that's the status quo, right? Is that the cost that we have?
No, those are certain costs that we have. All the service models, we have to pay postage. Is a silly one because there's not much there, but
insurance.
We did not go to the extent that if you have less than 10 branches, yes, your insurance costs are going to be slightly lower. We just didn't go there. It was considered de minimis in terms of what it's going to save us. So we didn't. We just took the really big ones. But so you got, the telecommunication costs. Those things are fairly fixed, no matter which model we go with.
And the variable ones are the ones that.
The big ones that glare out at you.
You know, utility costs.
Electricity,
if you have less, fewer branches.
Yeah.
So do you have something that details out, because that's the same cost for each of the models, that details
right.
what that consists of?
Yes, but we weren't going to present it because it's very detailed. Okay. It'd be like giving everybody one of these. It'd
okay.
be like putting one of these in there, you know, going to that level of detail. And if you think you want it, we certainly can do it. But, I mean, we've got them. We've got
don't
what
we've
pulled off.
Don't want to make it more complex. I'm just in terms of like explaining what each consists of.
Yeah, it's pretty much this.
Well, there's another appendix for you. Listed out. Not the details, just the
just
items.
A list of the categories.
Here are the categories that fall under fixed. Here's the categories.
Just renumber the appendices. Just did it.
Because you were asking if this was okay the way it's presented. This will be presented with each of the models.
Yes.
So like you cannot obviously see like model C has, you know, the decreased emphasis on technology. And so you'll call out these.
You'll see that
things
in
the bullets to say these are the kind of the core principles that went into like this model. These are the things that we stressed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can do the table of contents yet. You want the fixed cost regardless of the service model. Do you want the variable cost broken out too? List of the fixed costs and list of the variable costs?
Well, I think for each of the models, wouldn't you have that already? I think that would be part of it.
Yeah, it's there. I just have to
fight with Excel some more.
It's okay.
It's all right.
Excel is winning so far.
It's all 2-1 Excel's favor, but
time yet. We can tell you that the report is already how long?
96.
Yeah.
So. And these sheets aren't in yet, so we're at 100 yet.
So we did try to strike a balance between providing everything, summarizing, but having lots in the appendix for people to go back and look at the details. Sam?
On Model A, the first year 11, 12, where you come down to the bottom line, it shows the net operating loss of $156,949.
Yep.
And then it says fund balance at year end, $41,332, with a cash flow reserves of $595,000. The operating loss is generated by the reserve, but how do we arrive at the fund balance at year end of $41,332?
What you're not seeing is 10-11. We would have come into, and I have to bring up my computer. We would have come into the year with a positive fund balance.
I think it was $495,000. What was that?
That was the cash flow reserve. But I think
okay.
we expected to finish 10-11 $100-some-odd thousand to the good.
So
that
was the beginning fund balance.
The beginning fund balance of 11-12 was expected to be $111,000.
Is that reflected here?
No, because we took out 10-11. So everybody starts with that same amount. And I can put that in there. I can put that dollar amount in if you want. The 10-11 ends with X fund balance, whatever it is.
It's really 11-12 starts with
starts
beginning
with,
fund balance.
Yes. I can put that dollar amount in. It was $111,000, I think.
That you're estimating for this fiscal year?
Yes.
I mean, last year we ended up with almost $500,000.
Right, and that's going into the cash flow reserve.
So that's falling to the bottom line here.
That's the 495 plus the 100 they just put in. So that also starts with, cash flow reserve starts with 495.
And what's the goal?
Million.
For the cash flow reserve?
Yeah,
it was
a million.
It was 10% of 10 million. I mean,
it was 10%
of
revenues,
revenues
or costs.
Yeah.
And to make it easy for the models, we just said revenues are 11 million, give or take, so let's just make it a million that everybody's shooting for by the end of the fifth year.
So I'll put a note in there of what it starting the year with. What the fund balance is starting. It was just too hard to take 10-11 and fit it into this square peg in a round hole.
So as you can see, the board does have, you know, when it comes time for budget, let's say Model A was the one that was moving forward, the board would have some leeway to say, well, gee, you know, it looks like we're going into net operating losses, so why wouldn't we defer our capital improvement reserves for a year, or why wouldn't we take materials budget down to 8% instead of having it at 10%, et cetera.
That's what I mean by details can work out once you pick a model.
That is, exactly. I look at the models as being very directional in nature, and very much based on goals and vision of what library system is envisioned to be in each of these models, because they really are different. I will say I feel very successful in doing that part of our charge, that we really did come up with different approaches.
Yeah.
These four, we started out with more, they came down to four, and they are different from each other.
This is just one suggestion, getting back to that comment. Why not just say fixed costs and then take out regardless of server models and not have it bold, so that you're just keeping fixed costs, and then the variable costs are what people are going to be looking at based on the service models?
Yeah. We had it another way, and then I think the task force asked to change it. So but
that's why, I mean, nobody else outside the task force and Jack has really seen this, so it's one of the reasons we brought it here, to see so that's good input for us here, because if you have those suggestions and questions, I think other people will as well.
I think fixed costs, I think, is okay to say regardless of service model. The variable costs, however...
I'm saying cut out the service model portion, because that's just a fixed cost. You're saying that there's no...
Yeah, fixed costs, yeah, you could take out the regardless of service model. But variable, I think it might be clearer to actually leave that in, because if not a variable cost in... If this were just the model and it was variable costs, it might have a different meaning, because it might vary...
vary, like, based on usage of the library.
Right, yeah. Whereas
how
in this case...
How many days you're open and...
The varying factor is the service model is what makes it vary, not anything internally. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I'm saying leave that based on service models for the variable costs.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Where
okay.
The change is.
Right. Okay.
But
that's
just take
okay.
That whole.
Gotcha. That's what I was agreeing with. I'm beyond tired at this point. Let me tell you.
And one of the things you can see is for capital projects and special funds, we have the same line items for every model, whether they allocated any money towards that or not. And so it would be clear looking at it. For example, if we look at Model A, Model A has nothing in under capital projects for technology innovation and upgrade. That's probably not a good one because only one does. How about? No, that is. So you can see that they have two line items there that they did not allocate money towards. That's not in their model for, you know, their rationale.
And for Jack's purest sake, I recognize that these might not actually be technically capital projects in a in a financial way, but we wanted to group them kind of together, so we just called them that. You may or may not, when it comes down to it, consider them capital
projects.
Teresa, what's single service remodel?
You will learn that in the task force report.
There's a glossary.
That's the idea of consolidating desks, so we just have one desk in a branch, and in order to do that, there's to be done correctly, we need to do some remodeling. So,
it's an efficiency, a service efficiency. So you reduce personnel costs.
Just when you thought you knew it all, you're going to learn a lot.
And I'm sure this is in the glossary, but what does AMHS stand for?
Yes, it is. Automated Materials Handling System. That's the system where...
The people are writing letters about and stuff.
Oh, no, that's
really good. They like that one. They're really good.
You've used some of the libraries over the phone, haven't you?
Yeah, sure.
Several of them.
Library has this.
I don't know if they don't have self-check-in yet. Milpitas has. The Santa Clara libraries are doing this everywhere. It's you would return your materials, and the computer would automatically, you put them through a slot, and there's a little conveyor belt, and the computer automatically checks them in and sorts them.
Okay.
It saves significant personnel time, and libraries who have done it, small libraries, large libraries, report very quick payback because the capital costs are fairly significant, but the payback is pretty quick and significant. So it seems like all the work we did, and it boils down to one page. It's sort of interesting. It takes a look at it.
How many staff, how many people hours are invested in this? Just the tip of the iceberg, guys.
I mean, the one thing you'll notice that when we all first looked at these, we're like, what? Everybody basically ended up with the same personnel costs, give or take. Yeah. And then when you step back and say, well, of course, that had to be because that is the largest expense. So if you haven't gotten your personnel costs down to that level, you're never going to be able to pay to operate your system in any way, shape, or form. So... The biggest differences in these models are going to be how personnel is allocated to deliver what services.
This is good feedback.
So don't take these to the Sentinel just yet.
Until those edits are made.
The goal is to have the report to you guys next Monday.
And our last task force meeting is Thursday, and we're planning a celebration. After we've had some business, like, okay, everybody, can you put your name on this report with good conscience?
You guys deserve to pat yourself on the back.
It was an experience.
Yes.
Say that.
Teresa, about your email, were you looking to try to schedule meetings now?
If you want to.
Do
you want to wait until you see the
report? In the event that they may be canceled? I mean,
that'd be fine.
Okay. I just wanted to, if you were trying to get them scheduled, even though we haven't seen the report. I may not have any questions. But
yeah, I've got one scheduled with David and Catherine. I don't think the task force members want to meet anymore, but you and Jim might. So let me.
Yeah, at first I was thinking maybe I would sit down with you, but I'm concerned about Brown Act stuff doing that because I'm sitting in the task force.
Oh, are we adjourned?
We are. We are adjourned.